It really is all related. When we talk about health, when we talk about environment, when we talk about climate change, when we talk about poverty and the criminal justice system and education, it all comes down for me to people. Because in all of those situations, if we are not having a focus on people, it does no good. Because right now, our here in the United States, the framework is not focused on people, especially our most vulnerable people.
Greetings, everyone. My name is Alfredo González Valenzuela, and you are now at the Climate Frontline. All right, so we are now on the final day of Community Week, as well as this season. So this is the season finale of the Climate Frontline podcast, the first season. I can't believe we are here. It honestly doesn't feel real, but here we are, right? Yeah, in this case, I wanted to kind of circle back around to where this whole chapter began, which was with a conversation with Michelle Krim. Michelle Krim, if you hear the first episode, is my former coworker who was the chief sustainability officer with the city of Portland. And I just thought, well, what better way to finish the chapter by engaging with someone else who was there in that space with me? And that is Bill Beamer.
And today I get a chance to interview one of my coworkers and friend from my time here at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, Mr. Bill Beamer. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Thank you, Alfredo. It's good to talk with you.
Yeah, I'm so glad you got to join us, because I think you bring a really unique perspective to the work we both do. And where I really want to start, and the audience for this podcast, is youth. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of wanted to just hear a little bit about the work you've done previously with youth, specifically. I don't want to say at-risk youth, because that puts a connotation to people, but youth who are struggling in the system, outside the system, who don't have support, who may not have had a family or parents. What's that experience like been for you?
Mm-hmm. My work with youth, especially the deep work, was really when I was younger. It was a period of about 10, 12 years. Mentoring who I refer to as underprivileged kids. Mm-hmm. In Washington, D.C. It's where I'm from. It's a place where there's lots of power from especially the federal government, which actually has lots of control over Washington, D.C., which is actually a separate place with wonderful people. The largest demographic group in D.C. are African Americans, but D.C. does not have the power to control its own budget. It's controlled by the federal government. And having said that, there is a lot of poverty in the African American community in D.C. Mm-hmm. And just a few blocks off of Capitol Hill, within a mile and a half, there's a community, Wellington Park. It's a housing project with kids that grow up around lots of violence, lots of lack of opportunity. And I say we because it was started by a friend of mine, this organization called Horton's Kids. We started as friends, just going and picking up kids in the project on Thursdays, taking them out of the neighborhood for tutoring, reading and math skills, and on Sundays for some sort of recreational activity. The kids were basically between like the ages of 5 and I'd say 12 years old. And it was really an incredible experience, especially over a length of time like 12 years, because what I was able to see over that time, I came to a stronger understanding of, is the impact that environment has over our lives. Mm-hmm. What we're exposed to in our environments has a huge impact. And what I saw was that because the environment that the kids lived in did not have much opportunity, there was a lot of poverty, people struggling with lots of things like drug use, violence in the community. The kids saw that, and what seemed to help over a period of time is seeing how the kids started to see opportunities for themselves that they hadn't when they were younger. Mm-hmm. A lot of the kids starting out did not see themselves living past the age of 16. Mm-hmm. And after getting them out of that environment over a period of time and exposing them to different ways of being, different things out in the world, mm-hmm. you could see how their thoughts in terms of what could happen for them really changed. The time, I think, when it really hit me in terms of how important our environments are, was once when we went to pick up some kids. I had maybe 4 or so in my car. They were around 5, 6, 7 years old. And I had in my ashtray, I had these scented stones instead of an air freshener. And one of the kids looked at the stones and said, "Bill, what is that? Is that crack?" Mm-hmm. And that blew me away. I never made that association for myself in seeing that. Mm-hmm. But for that young child to associate that visual with crack really sort of stuck with me.
Yeah.
And that's when I started to look at, instead of telling people who are in toxic environments that they have to change themselves, I looked at how do we change our environments to help people have better outcomes in their lives because they are able to see different possibilities for them. And it's so important for youth. And what I look at is what type of future are we allowing the youth to imagine?
Right. Yeah, it's so powerful, that story, when you first told me and how you related to environment. And I think we'll get a chance to talk a little bit more about the environment. What would your message be to a youth who is listening to this right now and is just curious about the environmental field? You know, like you said, they are exposed to a different environment, certainly the case of many youth. What's the message that you would give to them either back then or now to aspire to get out of that environment and give them hope, really, right? What was your messaging there?
I think that ultimately what I want youth to feel is that they have a purpose, that there is something out for them, out there for them. There's something that is good out for them, out there for them, that they have something to contribute that is precious, that is needed. And what I would hope that youth can do is they can see themselves happy, healthy, and living a life that is fulfilling. And I say that sort of in that open way because it can be many things for many people. And what I think is difficult is when those things that really speak to us, that mean stuff to us, when we don't necessarily see that in our world. And sometimes if you don't see that in your world, it's hard for you to understand or believe that you can do something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I like how you touched on health, because that's also an area of expertise you have, or you certainly have experience in that in your time in the county, if I'm correct. How were you able to take some of those experiences and skills from previously mentoring youth to then the health arena?
Sure. What I decided to do, especially as a result of working with the kids, was to do some work in community health, because what I felt and what I continue to feel is that health is one of those components that, regardless of who we are, regardless of our environments, our socioeconomic conditions, our race, or any other sort of status or identity in our lives, if we are enjoying a better quality of health, our life experience is going to be better than if we are in a lesser state of health. And so that's what I looked at in terms of my graduate education. That's what I, when I came to Portland, Oregon, I looked for opportunities in public health and worked with Multnomah County Health Department to create environments that make healthier ways of living easier for people.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's great that we talk about a little bit of your background, because then if I was a person that just didn't know you, I would ask, so why would someone that did work in the health and youth spaces, why would someone just jump into doing climate action? I mean, how are those related?
Mm-hmm.
How would you respond to that?
I'm glad you asked that. It really is all related. When we talk about health, when we talk about environment, when we talk about climate change, when we talk about poverty and the criminal justice system and education, it all comes down for me to people. Because in all of those situations, if we are not having a focus on people, it does no good. Because right now, here in the United States, the framework is not focused on people, especially our most vulnerable people. A lot of times that can be youth. And when you look at the statistics around who lives in poverty, who suffers more, it is youth. When we look at these huge populations across the country. And I feel that if we were looking at how our most impacted and vulnerable populations are doing, and when we think of things such as climate action that we're taking, and we are understanding the impacts that those things have on the lives of people, we can make much better decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And for us to be able to understand those impacts on people, we need to talk with those communities. We need to talk to those people to understand what those impacts are, and then work in ways that we're able to create better solutions.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because you have a very unique perspective. You were here when the Climate Action Plan that won the award as best in the world. You took part of that process, and now you're still here when we're gearing up to putting together the next climate action plan. Does it live up to it being the best climate action in the world? I would ask that question and then say, did it go far enough?
In terms of the best plan in the world, I don't know. Was it perfect? No, it wasn't perfect. it was a step in a different direction. And I think an important step for us to take here in Portland, because not only does it help us to redirect, to focus in another way and to innovate in ways that help us to connect more with the human experience, to connect more with the concerns, the priorities of people who are most impacted. And that helps us create much better climate action plans that have far further reaching effects than simply climate. And it's important also because many other places around the country and around the world actually look at Portland as a leader. So it's important for us to understand that, to take that very seriously, and to be authentic with the work that we do.
When have you experienced the most love for the work? When have you been the happiest and most warm individually, right, for yourself? Can you tell me about those times?
Sure. The thing that gives me most joy and inspiration are those moments when I see that people understand, when they hear, when they sort of have aha moments, when we are able to talk about doing our work differently to create greater opportunities for people in the future, for people who have not been involved in the process, involved in the planning, been involved in the visioning for the future. When people start to understand that a climate action plan also has to include a shift in terms of how we extend opportunities for people to participate and people to benefit at these higher levels. Because when I say these higher levels, I'm talking about not just access to no carbon transportation and energy, but even potentially ownership of those things and voices in the decision making as to how these play out and how the frameworks of these new and emerging technologies and possibilities in this new world, sort of what things are we going to aspire to? Because typically the way things happen is we think within a current framework, which is very restrictive. And just as an example, we don't have a huge mix of solar energy in the energy mix here in Oregon. And a lot of times people attribute that to the rain that we get and the clouds that we have here in Oregon. Mm-hmm. However, when you look at Germany actually has fewer days of sunlight than we have in Oregon, but right. They're one of the world leaders in terms of solar energy in their mix. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is really due to regulatory structure and the restrictions that we have on being able to expand the use of solar energy here that creates greater control over solar energy in communities. Whereas here we focus more on, and it's really tied to a system that power holders, that stakeholders really control. And I really want our impacted communities, I really want youth to be able to think outside of the current structure. To think of what you want, not what you think you can have and what is available within the current structure, but what is it that you would like to see?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like your destiny and my destiny are tied. And I only say that because I think that when we started doing the BOS project and Afroecology kicked off at the same time, it seemed like there were synergies there, you know, like we were both able to have our own spaces to really understand and get clear that we are ourselves frontline communities and the people we love are part of that. So I kind of wanted to, you know, shift a little bit and hear a little bit about what your experience has been in that space and ask the question, why is it so important that your community has that space for you? For yourself or for themselves?
It is critical because when we think of different communities, when we think of different cultures, there are different ways that people see themselves. There are different ways that people connect with each other and that they connect with nature. It's not the single dominant culture's way here in the United States, here in Portland, that is the ultimate way that we should all behave. And if we don't allow people to express themselves and to have those spaces where they can be their authentic selves, mm-hmm. where that is part of that connection to health. That is, we are not allowing people to live their fullest selves if we're not allowing people to have those spaces and interact in those spaces in the way that enriches them.
Yeah. Having the space to be in community and figure out how we're all connected to ourselves and then to be connected back to earth, I think is so important. And it sounds like it's been really nurturing for you to be in community like that, right? And really center yourself and your own healing, because everybody has healing to do, right? If I was to pick one gift that you gave me, was the autobiography of Malcolm X, because that really put a lot of pieces that were everywhere for me into a table to say, okay, now you know you have a puzzle to solve and you need to continue doing your learning. And so I am so grateful for you to just giving me that opportunity to learn, you know, and start that learning process. I'm curious to know, as youth start to enter into the environmental sustainability workforce and consider these things, are there things you would like to share in terms of them taking some time to really understand the history before moving forward? Because that's a little bit of what I'm feeling from you right now, is the importance of history, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that where history is important is that it creates, knowing history creates context for what things are today, sort of how we got to where we are. And that can actually inform and help us think about, well, how do we create this new future? And I think that that's important because a large part of our history is actually involves creating a framework that has been very exclusive from the beginning. The beginnings of the United States, from the beginnings of this place, it has never been a place of freedom and equality. It's been a place of conquest, of extraction, of exploitation. When Europeans first got here and started taking land from Native people, that was the beginning of it. The first Africans were actually brought here and sold into slavery 400 years ago, 1619, in Jamestown, Virginia. And it is that process of extraction, of exploitation, that actually has led to many of the problems that we have here, not only in the United States, but around the world, because that way of being has kind of been exploited around the world. When we talk about exploitation and extraction from many different places around the globe, and it is that process, especially that process of hoarding power, of hoarding money and resources, and dismissing the needs, the humanity of other people. And if we did have a world, and this is where in understanding what happened in the past and being able to see these inequities that we're living with now, mm-hmm. that continue, it should help us understand that we can't continue to operate in those ways.
Yeah. And some people would call that innovation, right? I think many times we think of technology as the innovation, but sometimes it's just, or often, it's just leaning back on what our ancestors did. And and learning from history, right? I think it was Mark Twain who said, history doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme. So, looking forward, I'm curious, what role does technology play in all this, especially with youth? You know, youth are in their screens a lot. They're getting their news feed through there. Social media is just taking over the world, you know? And we still have large systemic problems. We have poverty, we have racism, we have many things that are overwhelming. And what are your thoughts? What role will technology play, and how should youth utilize technology as we move forward?
Wow, I think a large part of that is actually to be decided by youth in terms of their imaginations and what they want to create. And I say that, one, with the thinking about how a lot of the technologies today were created because of imaginations or pictures or stories that were created a long time ago.
Mm.
And thinking about the show Star Trek and a lot of things that they had in Star Trek, those things didn't exist. And the writers talk about like their talking devices that they had. They didn't, that didn't exist. It was just something that they came up with. And the person who created the cell phones with Motorola talks about seeing that when they were younger, and that planted the seed for them to create cell phones.
Yeah.
And the device that they had, that the doctor on the ship had, which scanned people so that without invasively being able to see what was going on inside of people, that was the inspiration for creating MRI machines that can.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
That's pretty cool.
Yes. So I think that when we talk about technology, I think our youth can come up with so many things that we don't actually see now. However, I think the important thing, again, is to allow people to think outside of the current framework and to think in terms of how can we create things that actually create a better world. It doesn't just, we're not just creating things that continue to enrich and create greater power for sort of the 1%, but how are we using our creativity to make a world where we all have a place? And I think that with some of that, that involves thinking about what is really important in our lives and how do we create greater value for that in our society moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Hard question, huh? I was just curious to know what your thoughts are on technology, because I don't think you're going to be able to, at least here in the U.S., it's hard to separate the youth from technology. Yeah.
It is. It is. I would hope that we can start to use it in forms. So instead of forms that simply are enriching our technology companies in different ways, where they become multi-billion-dollar companies, that we're doing things that actually enrich communities in different ways.
You're talking about wealth inequality.
Yes, and even something very practical. So I would love to see youth create an app that is similar to, let's say, Uber or Lyft, but it is for your community so that you can actually own a ride-sharing company instead of the money going out to these corporations.
Yeah, a fleet of vehicles that's the communities, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'd love to see youth create a different energy grid where you can generate renewable energy in your community and you can share it with your neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of having to rely on utility companies.
Yeah.
And so you get to actually own the energy in your community and you get to keep the money from that energy that you're sharing within your communities, and you're able to, at the same time, govern how that works. So you're able to create this process where more and more people get to be involved. at different levels and creating a different society. Areas when we talk about technology and science and engineering, even thinking about something like kinetic energy, taking that energy from motion and turning it into electric energy. Mm-hmm. So think about a playground, swings moving, the sort of like the merry-go-round, the thing that spins around. How do we capture energy from those things and translate it into perhaps lights at the playground? How do we translate the energy from our feet walking onto sidewalks into lights that light up the sidewalk as we're walking down the sidewalk? How do we do that for the buildings that we live in? So if we are living in a single family home or multifamily homes and apartments, and we're walking up and down the stairs and across the floors, we're actually generating light for our homes. How do we create different devices in our homes so that just like your cell phone or your laptop that can actually store energy for a while, how do we create our appliances so that they can do that? So our refrigerators and stoves and washers and dryers, these things that consume energy, how do we create them so that they can store energy? So instead of thinking about just a huge battery that stores electricity for an entire home. Mm-hmm. So I think that there are sort of those specific things. There are those things in terms of even thinking about as you, how do we create a different frame? And this is talking about sort of the regulation, the rules that say and that give power to large corporations in control in the hands of large corporations when we talk about clean energy. So how do we as people, as youth, become aware citizens, aware people, so that when we're voting and we're putting people into office, that we're asking them these questions. Mm-hmm. Are you going to, how are you going to create opportunities for us to own our own energy?
Yeah.
Because these are the things that need to happen in order for the community to have more power. Or even for youth, how do you become those leaders where you need to make those changes?
Yeah, I think those are great questions. Thank you for those. I think hopefully the youth find it valuable to think about. I want to go back to something you said, though. You said science. And I want to just spend a minute on that because you know, I studied environmental science and I got my undergrad in that. And more often than not, that means data, statistics. So I want to make sure we're capturing what we're meaning by science.
Sure.
We're talking about not Western science. We're talking about other types of sciences as well. Would you agree? Like ancestral science, indigenous, they also had sciences.
Absolutely.
So I just want to make sure we're in agreement that we're not talking about just statistical graphs. We're also talking about the stories and wisdom that are told by elders, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, one of our colleagues who is from Mexico talks about creating a solar oven out in the desert in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So not using, buying things from a kit, but just using reflectors to capture the energy within a box and to cook food within a box using the sun's energy.
Yeah.
So looking at what are those things that we can do that actually serves purposes in especially within the access that we have. And when we think about even data, we all are data people because we're all collecting information.
Right.
So how do we collect our information and use that information to tell our story? Those are in different ways that we may collect and tell our stories, but that is still part of that statistical, that is in that field of statistics, but it's not necessarily talked about.
Yeah. And I think through the work we've done to review the climate action plan, we came to find out pretty quickly that we can lie with data.
Yes.
I'm curious. One thing I appreciate about you is that you're able to find a place for everybody in the Just Transition, whether their life journey took them left or right. And I'm just curious to know, you, when I asked you these questions about where youth should spend their time thinking about the future, you were talking a lot about energy, right? More or less. What about for those youth who may be listening to this and may say, you know, I don't see higher education as my path, either because they don't have access to it or they just choose to, that that's not their path. Is there a place for them in the transition? And could you just share a little bit about that?
Absolutely. In fact, what I was talking about in terms of even the advocacy in terms of either being leaders or holding leaders accountable for what you want in the future is a huge, huge role to play in this Just Transition. Organizing within your community is a huge role to play. Even simply sharing your voice, your thoughts, your perspectives is very important.
Mm-hmm.
Because and to make sure that within our communities, we are capturing those voices. We are understanding what it is that people need. So if you feel that your community, that your needs are not being met, there is a role to be played in terms of coming together as a community, finding those points of access, demanding that that access is created for you because you are important. Your needs are important. Your community's needs are important. Your family's needs are important. So it's not simply those people with degrees and letters behind their names who mean the most in this. We all have a role to play. And art is also a huge part of it because art is part of that storytelling as well.
Yeah.
So if we're talking about music, if we're talking about visual arts, if we're talking about movement, if we're talking about anything that is communicating in ways that is expressing who we are and what we need and how we are a part of this world and community, it's all important.
Right. Well, you heard it from Bill himself. There's a space for all youth in this, in these challenges we face. And I certainly have hope with people like you that we're going to come out on top.
And I have hope is because of people like you.
So thank you again for joining me today. I am with Bill Beamer, Climate Action Coordinator with the City of Portland Bureau of Planning Sustainability here in Portland, Oregon, United States. Thank you so much for joining me today, Bill. Are there any last thoughts you'd like to share as we wrap this up?
I want people to always, even when times get tough, to know that tomorrow's another day, that things can change. And I would hope that we can all find energy and inspiration and especially with our youth, continue to look at what it is that you want, what future it is that you envision, and not simply look at the limitations that are in front of you today.
All right. Thank you so much, Bill. Appreciate it.
You know, I'm just filled with gratitude to have had the opportunity to both work with Bill and learn from him. Bill has been someone who I really look up to. He gave me so many lessons and gifts over the years that I've gotten to know him, and I just really appreciate him and his family for everything that they do. And yeah, I just wanted to share this opportunity with you because, like I said, I just wanted to close the chapter in a similar way in which I began it, which is why I started this podcast, right? It's to change the narrative around how we talk about climate change. And one thing that has come to be clear is, you know, aside that it's not only about carbon emissions, is that in order to change the narrative around what climate change is, or how mainstream media or mainstream environmental organizations talk about it, we're going to have to change other narratives. And that's narratives around mental health, drugs, like we heard from episodes in Philadelphia with Mike. And it's certainly changing the narrative around how we talk about and when we talk about Native people. And so this concludes season one of the Climate Frontline, as well as Community Week. I hope you have enjoyed it. I hope there has been a moment of clarity, or even just a further layer of questions, because I don't have the answers to a lot of these things. I just try to bring people together to have these conversations and hopefully get to a place of collaboration. And so if you've enjoyed this episode or any of the previous episodes, if you have questions or anything like that, please, by all means, send them my way. If you have a recommendation, leave it on Apple Podcast. I'm going to be taking a break from this, and be sure to stay in touch. I'm going to be on a holiday break like the rest of you also. Whatever you're celebrating, regardless of where you are in the world, I wish you an opportunity to have a good time with your family members, with your loved ones, or even your friends. Be sure to take some time to rest, and hopefully this next calendar year is one that we can treasure and appreciate in a different way. So stay tuned for the next season. It has been a pleasure to be with you all this first couple episodes. I will see you next time. Take care. Bye-bye. The communities who are experiencing the worst effects of climate change are those who are best positioned to innovate solutions. Thank you for tuning in and being part of changing the narrative. See you next time at the Climate Frontline.